This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Inside Story on BFM 89.9.
Good evening. This is Inside Story with Lee Chui Lin and Sharmila Ganesan. Tonight, schools have the option to go back to home-based teaching if COVID-19 cases continue to rise.
First, we look at how teachers are feeling about this. And then the other side of the equation, parents and children.
So we want to know, if you've got school-going kids, what has it been like for them and for you with them heading back to school? And do you think having the option to learn from home is the way to go? Call us 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio. This is Inside Story. It is 6:07, and it's a little bit of deja vu, I have to say, with our next story, but it is important and interesting, I think, partly because there is a determination now for schools to stay open. This is something that we've kept hearing, right? Our children are finally back in school, and closing schools is seen only as a last resort, which is why the Ministry of Education has provided primary school and Form 1 to Form 4 students with the option to participate in home-based learning and teaching should COVID-19 cases rise drastically. It is, of course, worth saying that we are seeing the caseload in our country increase.
Yes. So essentially, the students who are undergoing SPM and STPM will be the focus, right? So they'll be given the priority to be able to study in school. All of the others, the idea is that if there is a need, we can go back to home-based learning. Now, I think where this gets interesting but also complicated is that home-based learning hasn't uniformly been a success across the board. And that's probably putting it mildly. Mm. While it might have been a necessity with the cases, I think it is worth asking what we've learned with these nearly 2 years at this point of not continuous, but a substantial amount of time with students learning from home. What has improved, not just in terms of connectivity and devices, which is one whole issue, but also in terms of delivery and actual teaching method?
And then after that, the emotional and social impact also of learning from home. So I don't think, one thing I do want to say is that I don't think that learning from home should be seen simply in isolation as, oh, you know, they're not going to school. The other part of it, and this is a point that's been well made, I just wanted to bring it back up, is that it's also about a lack of consistency in what is happening for children, right? There's structures are changing every day. It's like, well, what does my day look like? Do I get up at this time? Am I going to ride the car? Am I going to go to a classroom? Or instead, am I going to sit at this table with mum by my side and, you know, doing the learning? Like there are all these different things that come in, right? And there is that lack of consistency that we're seeing, which is why, again, going back to what I said earlier, there's been such a great focus on let's get children back in school. And then let's keep schools open. However, I think it is important also to say that, okay, while maybe, like you said, it's not been a uniform success, the knowledge that the option exists, should there be a need for it, especially when, you know, children are still in the process of being vaccinated, it's not necessarily, you know, a 100% done deal at all. It's important to know the option exists and can be taken.
I think also because, you know, we're talking about this as if this current rise in cases may be the only time we need to think about this. But we don't know, right? We might actually keep seeing this happen over and over again. And so are we then equipped to kind of make these kinds of decisions when needed, go back to school, when needed, home, and make that process as seamless as possible? And as I suppose with all of those things that you've just said, to have the least amount of negative impact on the students and the teachers and the parents, I think this phase now feels almost like a litmus test for that process.
Yes, and also whether there's going to be a redirecting of resources or there has been. Because I'm just thinking of the resources that teachers require to teach online as well. And how, you know, if there's an assumption that, well, everybody's back in the classroom, how does that change when you have a hybrid learning model kicking back in? So like we said, we're going to try to look at this from both sides of the equation. So after this, we'll be joined by Chan Soon Singh, CEO at Teach for Malaysia. And you know, to hear how teachers are handling this. After that, we're going to be hearing from a parent of two children about what that's been like. But we also want to hear from you, of course. If you have school-going kids, what has it been like for them and for you going back to school, going back to the physical classroom? Do you think having the option to learn from home, as we're seeing with the MOE, is the way to go? That number to call, 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio.
Be firmly motivated. BFM 89.9.
It's 6:13. You're listening to Inside Story with Lynn and Sharmila. We're talking today about the fact that essentially the Ministry of Education has provided schools the option to go back to home-based teaching if COVID-19 cases continue to rise. And we are just trying to look at the impacts of that. We'd like to hear from you. If you have school-going children, what has it been like for them and for you as they go back to the classroom? And do you think that having the option to learn from home is the way to go? That number to call is 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Joining us now to talk about this from the educationist's point of view is Chan Sun Sing, CEO of Teach for Malaysia. Sun Sing, as always, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
All right. So with school reopening late last year, after so many months of home-based learning and all that back and forth, what has it been like being back in school?
Yeah, you know, I think that the return to school has seen some challenges, especially as when we first returned to school, there was this whole rotational system that was going on in the beginning. And there were definitely challenges with that and lower attendance initially. But that has begun to pick up. And I think that what we see is that at least from a student's learning perspective, just being back in school makes so much of a difference for students at this point in time, because so many students were just completely cut off when schools were closed for home-based learning. So overall, you know, the management, the return to school has had some hiccups here and there, but overall it has been more beneficial for students. At this point in time, with the rise of cases, you know, there are clusters all over and schools all over. And I think that taking an approach that allows schools to make more decisions about how they manage the situation at this point in time is going to be important.
So if I could get you to expand on that, of course, the Education Ministry has allowed schools to opt now for home-based learning if cases rise. How do you feel about this decision? Is this the way to go?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of things that we need to take into account, right? I think number one, the most important thing is that we have to be prioritizing safety at this point in time, right? Safety of our students, safety of the teaching faculty and the school communities. The second thing, though, that I think is really, really important is that we cannot go back to a situation where we have blanket school closures across the board. And, you know, it has taken so much of a toll on students' learning. And if we were to go back into that situation, it will not only set kids continue to set kids back in terms of their learning, but it will just completely demolish whatever motivation that has kind of been built up in these last few months. And I think the alternative to that is really thinking about like decentralized decision making, in which schools, in partnership with you know, their parent communities and the health authorities, giving them the ability to make choices about what matters most to their students and their current situation. So decision by the ministry to allow schools to choose, I think, is important, right? And what will be important is that, you know, obviously schools will know the needs of their students, right? And they will know the ability for their students to learn online. There may be some communities in which that is going to be possible, not ideal, but still possible for that to happen. And by virtue of giving schools the choice to be able to do that, I think that that is a positive thing, but it becomes a challenge if it becomes a mandated thing for schools to do.
So what have you heard from teachers about this sort of option?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it will be, to be honest, quite a struggle for teachers, right, to continue to manage the switching back from in-person learning to online learning. And I think that that's why it's going to be really important to figure out, the, you know, one thing that the Ministry of Education has been really trying to encourage is this concept of blended learning. And blended learning is this concept that, you know, there are some things that a school, that a student might be able to learn independently, and then some things that you best use the in-person learning time for. So for example, if schools were to go back to an online learning, in some schools, specific schools, if they were to go back to an online learning option, you know, I think that thinking about how it might not make sense to do that entirely, but if they go back at least to this rotational system, right, where you and if you could do 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off, you send kids back with actual materials or things that they can be using to learn at home, or be giving them assignments that they're working on at home. Then they come back to school, and then that's where they do the collaboration and working together with their classmates and getting feedback from teachers. And that may help teachers at least to have a system in which they can manage instead of kind of trying to sort of go back to like fully back online, or maybe they have some kids in school. So a blended learning approach may help. But the bottom line is it will be additional work for teachers.
What factors do you think will help schools decide whether to operate as per normal or opt for home-based learning?
Yeah, so I mean, like I said earlier, right, I think that it's a decision that needs to be made in partnership. And so I think it's working with the PIBGs, the parents, teacher communities in the schools. I think it's also working with the local health authorities to understand, you know, whether it is really safe or not for schools to be able to open. I do think that one of the challenges that we saw with the initial reopening of school was that because of the blanket kind of like, everyone has to do a rotational system. There were schools that had very few COVID cases and were still doing a rotational system, which did not make sense at all, right? And so I think that when we say that schools have the option to conduct home-based learning, I think that within that, what that means should be determined by the school. So if that means if the school, let's say, is doing like one whole month of home-based learning, or if they're going back to a rotational system, they need the flexibility to make those choices as well. So I think that it will be really important that the school can, number one, do that in partnership, but also have the flexibility to choose the modality of home-based learning that will work best for their community.
So how do you see this rise in cases potentially affecting school exams like the PT3?
Yeah, you know, the NUTP has encouraged the Ministry of Education to postpone PT3. Actually, how PT3 works is that it's actually a summative based on a series of classroom-based assessments that have taken place from Form 1 to Form 3. So actually schools, because PT3 is actually a decentralized examination, schools actually have, if they've been doing the formative-based assessment across these last 3 years, which they've had to, they actually have enough data to show ability and the competency of a student across the curriculum. So all of the data that's been collected through these classroom-based assessments over the years can be used to showcase a student's ability and whether they've been able to master their curriculum across the past 3 years. So it is possible to delay the PT3 further. I think the ministry has said that they're going to obviously prioritize the SPM and SDPM examinations and remain open for those things. And they will be allowed to, or they will have the ability to distance if they're giving the option for some other forms to be, or school years to be home-based.
So the Education Ministry has mentioned that risk assessments will be done from time to time. How are these assessments done, and are they enough?
Yeah, so the Ministry of Education actually works very, very closely with the Ministry of Health to constantly assess the situation and think about what the SOPs are and how they need to be in place and what needs to be tweaked and so forth. I think that what's going to be important is like I said, right, if we're giving autonomy to the schools to make decisions about how these home-based learning things are going to happen, I think that it's really equipping school leadership and the local authorities to be able to make those informed decisions at the local level. So that's the area that I think can continue to be strengthened.
So as we've been saying, right, I don't think we can say everybody has enjoyed online learning or necessarily thought that it was the best path, especially on the parental side. How would you address concerns from parents who are unsure whether online learning is working for their kids?
Yeah, I mean, I think that generally across the board, online learning has been a challenge, right? But that's not to say that it doesn't work 100%, right? There are populations of students who actually prefer online learning and have felt like they've learned better through online learning. And I think that what is going to be really important is, especially with the shift away from things like the abolishment of UPSR, the ministry is really putting in place a lot more formative assessments that help a teacher, a student, and parents to understand the progress of their child on an ongoing basis. And so then the communication between a teacher and their parents, really showcasing what students have been learning and helping parents to understand their students' progress through the form of their classroom-based assessments, I think can be helpful for parents to understand what's been going on in schools in general, but also in this online learning context. And so that communication between parents and teachers will be important to be able to really clearly communicate the progress. That being said, like I said, and you said, it has been a challenge, and it definitely hasn't been as effective as in-person learning is for kids currently.
Yeah, and that sort of criticism of the implementation of home-based learning over the last couple of years, what's changed in that time and what has worked with these changes?
Yeah, I think that the home-based learning was first implemented at the very beginning. It was a completely new situation for everyone. And everyone was kind of like scrambling, trying to figure out how to make sense of it and what to do. And, everyone initially defaulted to online learning. But I think as time went by, there was a greater understanding of what home-based learning could mean, right? And so the Ministry of Education introduced different modalities of home-based learning, whether it was online learning, whether it was packets being sent to school. And then they also helped schools to think about how to structure that learning time. Because in the beginning, it was just all teachers just trying to figure out how to teach. There wasn't a timetable for online learning. And so there were then these structures that were then put in place over time. And, the introduction of Didic TV also did help for some kids in the most rural places. Although it does not cover the curriculum comprehensively, it does help to some extent. I think it's going to be really important moving forward that we continue to invest in the systems that will enable distance learning in order to ensure that our system is resilient in the future, right? It may be COVID-19 today, but in the future, if another pandemic comes along, right, how do we then manage, right? And so I think that the investment in closing the digital divide, the investment ensuring that kids have access to devices, have access to high quality content online, is going to continue to be something that is going to be important in the long run. And so I hope that, one of the things that I hope is that, we've invested, but we need to continue to invest in the resilience of our system to ensure that whatever happens in the future, our kids will be set up to be able to connect to learning no matter what the situation is.
We have a minute and a bit left with you. I think this one is for the parents. Can you share what parents or guardians can do to help make home learning more effective?
Yeah, I think the first thing, right, is that for many students, not all, but for many students, going back to home-based learning is going to be really frustrating. And being back at home is going to be really frustrating. And so, and I'm sure for parents as well, it will be frustrating as well. But I think that the first thing really is to think about, and I say this knowing that it is very difficult, right? But how do you encourage your kids? And I think that, kids will be discouraged. So kind of like forcing and scolding kids to learn may not be the most helpful approach, but really just encouraging them and trying to figure out what's going to motivate your kids to be able to engage in online learning. Obviously, where it's possible to ensure that kids have access to the devices, to the connectivity, and also just a focused learning environment where they can spend that time learning will be helpful. And I think just as a parent engaging in conversation with your child, right? Like about what they learned today, and just getting really curious about what happened in their learning experience, I think will be important to help encourage that conversation.
Soon Sing, as always, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
That was Chan Soon Sing, CEO of Teach for Malaysia, weighing in on the educationist's point of view, really, of this suggestion from the MOE for primary school and Form 1 to Form 4 students to be able to participate in home-based learning and teaching, you know, basically to handle the rise in COVID-19. We'd like to hear from you. Do you think this is a good idea? And if you have school-going kids, what has it been like for them and for you going back to the classroom? You can call us, WhatsApp us, tweet us. Keep it here, BFM 89.9.
Bodacious, fabulous minds. BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 6:37 and you're listening to Inside Story with Lynn and Sharmila. And today we're talking about the fact that schools have the option to go back to home-based teaching if COVID-19 cases continue to rise, or basically to assist them, right, in managing COVID-19 cases and clusters in the school. And, you know, I don't think online learning or hybrid learning has been a universally popular thing. So we've been asking you for your thoughts on this. I mean, if you have school-going children, what has it been like for them and for you as they return physically to the classroom? And also, do you think that having the option to learn from home like this is the way to go? That number to call is 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio. And we have a pair of messages.
Boy says, homeschooling won't do much in curbing COVID, in my opinion, unless the subject matter focuses on boarding school. Let us be honest about the data. Does the data show that most people are being affected at school, or do they just get an infection from going to a theme park or kanduri or kedaimakan or shopping malls? Second, sick or unhealthy students, even without the pandemic, will most likely rest at home. And third, it really will set back and destroy children's learning and understanding. This isn't the accurate way of handling it. It's just like when we are overweight and want to lose a few kilos, we cut dessert and ice cream, but after getting to the ideal weight, we go back to eating those sweets. This is a problem with inconsistency, actually.
So a few things that I want to pick up from there, because I think, Boye, you make a number of good points. I think the inconsistency thing is definitely something that has been coming through. I do, however, want to bring it back to what our guest Soon Sing said earlier about autonomy. So I think the problem is if you've been inconsistent in the past, then now even a good plan, if it's a change of plans, is going to be seen as inconsistency as opposed to giving schools more autonomy and choice. And it's hard to make that distinction, right, when you're looking at it along a continuum of action and decisions. But if we think about what is needed in this current moment and whether this is the way to go, I'm not 100%, but I don't think that it is also entirely fair to say that it is just about consistency. And the point about data is also really interesting, because I think that you raise a good point, right? Everyone's living lives outside of the office, outside of schools. But the flip side is that you also have people who are coming into school not knowing they're sick and then spreading the virus, and then other children are sick. And so I think from that point of view, also if half your class is at home, what do you do then, right, as a teacher? What is actually the most efficient thing to do?
And I think we are, you know, every phase of this pandemic has been different, right? And we are moving towards now wanting some semblance of, you know, quote unquote, normal life, or going back to some degree of normalcy. And I think this is part and parcel of that, like the push and pull of seeing what we can do and what we need to have in place as a safeguard. And this is not a defense necessarily of everything that the ministry has done, but I do think that it is tough to know what to do when. It's a matter of trial and error.
Something that I realized we didn't ask Soon Sing, and I'm not certain has been clarified, is how long? So when we talk about the option to learn from home, right, I'm not sure how long, how many days, whether it falls to the school to say, okay, for this week, we're going to be doing this. Because I feel like I'm being very consistent, at least, in harping on the need for consistency. This is repetition under the guise of consistency. But I really think it's important to give children a sense of structure and to give children a sense of consistency. And so I think even in the framing of it for the children, in terms of, okay, you're at home, but you're at home for a week, and then after that, we're back. You know, something like that. I don't know what's being communicated at the moment.
We have Pamela saying, while home-based learning works for certain kids, it doesn't work for both of mine. Both of them had a hard time concentrating and a parent had to sit with them in order for them to listen, which is a luxury when both parents might not be able to work from home. Many of our teachers are not trained to teach online as well. And sometimes I even find it hard to focus in the classes because it's so boring. One of my kids seems to have symptoms of depression during the MCO, but she's so much happier now after school has reopened.
Well, I'm really glad to hear that, right? That there has been a lifting of spirits. I think the point about concentration is very real. And it is a problem people have with onlineness in general. And that's before we even get to the class structure. I also think that when I think back to the more boring classes of my youth, the idea of having to sit through them again and force a child to focus on something that I know to be dull, man, that must be tough.
I was just thinking that actually, like, you know, most of us adults thinking, ah, that's behind me. I'm never going to have to revisit that again. And now, bam, who knew? Now you sit through that every day. And then you have to pretend that it's important and you want your child to do it.
And the thing is, it is important, right? But like, just the repetition of it. I'm just thinking of sitting through B-A, ba, C-A, cha, ba, cha. I think I will. I don't know if I can do it, guys. I really don't know.
I have some ad maths lessons that are coming back already right now as you're mentioning it.
So we're talking about the option for students, to be able to do home-based learning and teaching, right? Or for schools to make that choice if COVID-19 cases rise drastically or to handle the current rise in COVID-19. So we'd like to hear from you. If you have school-going kids, what has it been like for them and for you going back to school? And also, do you think that having the option to learn from home is the way to go? That number to call is 7733-2900. WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio. After this, we are going to be joined by a educationist and a parent, so someone able to provide both sides of that. So we'll be taking a quick break, but after we'll return to speak to Ng Min Yan. So keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Because freedom matters. BFM 89.9.
It is just about 6:45, really, and you're listening to Inside Story with Lynn and Sharmila. We're talking today about the option for schools to return to home-based learning. This is for primary school, from 1 to form 4 students, and this is to manage COVID-19 cases, basically, amidst this current rise. We'd like to hear from you. Do you think having this option is good? And what has the return to school been like for your children? You can call us 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Joining us now to share her experience is Ng Min Yan, who is an educationist as well as a parent of two children. Min Yan, thanks for speaking with us.
Hi, hello.
Hi. So how do you feel about schools possibly reverting back to home-based learning if cases continue to rise?
Well, as a working mother of two, I have mixed feelings. While I want to keep children in a safe bubble, I'm also aware that life must go on. So having said that, cases are on the rise. And in fact, my son's class reported 3 COVID cases in the past week. So, of course, the parents feel bad, but we are all in this together. And we need to support each other and be strong and not play the blame game. So we recently vaccinated my 9-year-old 2 days ago. And thankfully, the side effects were very mild. There was no fever, just a sore arm. So I do urge everyone to get their kids vaccinated. Herd community, right? But of course, this is just my personal opinion. So as an educationist myself, I run 45 real kids kindergartens. And while my kids needed my attention, my 45 real kids centers were also running online lessons for the very first time. And it was just a very daunting task, having to balance both work and family. But I mean, if the government decides to revert to home-based learning, so be it. Because you can't keep your kids home forever, and their education is affected. So it really depends very much on the education provider and how responsible they are. Because I have seen different schools run online classes differently, and the outcomes are also very different. So, and I would say that parents play a much bigger role in home-based learning, and some parents just can't spare that time due to the work expectations. So thankfully, we are more well-prepared now. If we do have to revert back to home-based learning, it's just a matter of getting used to it again. So yeah, that's what I feel.
Could you share the challenges that you face during these home-based learning periods?
Where do I even start? I mean, as I mentioned earlier, the teething problems at home was, of course, then there's the gadgets involved and the timetabling of the kids having to share those limited gadgets. And during the first lockdown, there were plenty of adaptations to be made. The number of gadgets, the kids' timetabling, it was pretty hard for me to juggle at first. Mornings for me were really hectic in my household because while my kids needed my attention, the 45 Real Kids principals will be calling almost every morning. And when you have 45 kindergartens, it's if it's not this five calling you today, there will be another five calling you another day and the next five calling you the following day. So a normal day in my house would be me cradling a phone to my left ear, taking notes with my right hand, the kids shouting questions, trying to get my attention, teacher calling them back to their online Zoom classes, and my mother-in-law will be cooking in the kitchen. So, and of course, during this time, my husband is an essential worker and thus was working throughout MCO. So yeah, a day in the life of a working mother of two. Yeah.
So for the children then, how have they adjusted to returning back to school?
Oh, they loved it. My Nate and Natalie are social butterflies and they thrive on social interaction. So when school started, they were so happy to get back into the classroom. I, on the other hand, when I visit my Real Kids centers and realized that something was missing in the kindergarten environment. While you would normally hear laughter and chatter during lessons, these days, the mornings were unusually quiet because I believe parents have sort of brainwashed their kids into not touching friends, not sharing things. I mean, it's probably a culture shock to the kids having to reverse all that they have learned pre-COVID. These days, it's no talking, no sharing of stuff. It's just very surreal for me to be walking into a rather subdued classroom versus pre-COVID where the kids were clamoring for your attention and just plain laughter from those kids. It really brings joy to your heart. Now it's just more quiet. It's weird. Yeah.
You mentioned earlier the challenges that you faced. What concerns do you have about going back to online learning?
My concerns are screen time, for sure. I don't want my kids growing up with eyesight problems, which I kind of foresee will happen. And secondly, lack of social interaction. Because I think at this point in time, without that social interaction, they may not know how to interact with their peers versus our days where we have friends every day, we will go out cycling in the evening and all that. But now, they're just facing their screens. And even during classes, there's limited speaking time because the teacher needs to get on with the lessons and all that. And also the amount of knowledge that my children actually absorb, this is actually one of my main concerns. How much are they absorbing online during online classes versus if it was a physical class? Yeah.
Let's talk about that, right? You mentioned that they enjoy that kind of social, you know, being able to mix, being able to see their friends, and this idea or this question of how much they're actually absorbing. Was there anything about online learning that you think really did work, though, for your children, or was it just overall not the best?
I think it was more going with the motion because everyone else at that time had to go into online learning. So it wasn't, there wasn't a choice between physical or online. It was the first MCO lockdown and everyone had to do online. And so at that time, I consoled myself saying that, look, everyone else is going online. It's not just your kids. And if they can't absorb that much, I'm guessing the others are struggling with the same problems as well. And having spoken to a few other parents, my friends, we face that similar problem. So I try and tell myself, look, kids during this COVID period, when they grow up, they would probably be about the same. Everyone having that same problem. Yeah.
What's the actual learning been like? Would you say home-based learning has been effective as a learning tool?
It's an effective tool if you know how to conduct it. So, for example, in Real Kids, I keep coming back to Real Kids is because I work there, so this is my experience. We have a team to research which apps to use, how much screen time is ideal, how long the break should be before you actually lose the student's interest. And we will, in fact, we will be providing online learning in our kindies from March and even the current 2-3 months. But I'd say parents, if you can, please bring your kids back to school, because it's not which is better, it's just different. So yeah, that's my take on it.
I'm curious how you ensure a good balance between screen time for education and screen time for entertainment during all of this.
I feel really guilty when you ask me this question, because for me, the lines are really blurred in my household. So I'm probably not a good example to be answering this question right now, because they're pretty much on the screen all the time, because learning is one thing. The other thing is sometimes you don't even know the classes have ended and they're actually on YouTube already until you realize that when you walk past the screen. So yeah, balance, I still need to work on that. Yeah.
So we have just about 2 minutes left. Any tips as a parent that you'd like to share to help other parents make online learning more conducive for everyone?
Well, I would say if you're not a working parent, it's best to sit with your child. They would benefit from your attention and they actually stay more focused throughout the lesson. And you also get to know your kids' friends in the process. Of course, I'm saying this as a mother of a primary school student and not as a mother of a secondary school student. I think if your kid was a teenager, he or she would probably be absolutely horrified if you sat next to them. But if you're a working parent, to stay connected with other parents of the class and share notes, homework, and just moral support to keep each other motivated, it's very easy to lose sight of the goal, which is your kids' education right now. So a good network support system is very important to keep abreast with your kids' development. Yeah.
Minyan, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thank you very much.
That was Eng Minyan, an educationist and parent of 2 children, sharing her experience about basically home-based learning and this idea of having the option for students to learn from home, schools giving that option. We'd like to hear from you. What has your experience been like in this area? And do you think that having the option to learn from home is the way to go? That number to call is 7733-2900. WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.